Free is a zero tobacco nicotine pouch designed for people who want a simple, hassle-free way to enjoy nicotine without smoke, vapor, or the smell. Everything about Free is engineered for ease, fast flavor, fast effect, and fast delivery straight to your door. The strength range goes from 3 milligrams all the way up to 15 milligrams, so whether you're looking for something on the lighter side or you want maximum strength, they've got you covered. Flavors, mint, wintergreen, watermelon, which is new, plus lush, sweet, and original. Enough variety that picking a flavor feels like picking a mood. Available in single tins, mega packs, and bundles for those who like to commit. The pouches come pre-primed, so flavor and effect hit instantly. No waiting around. They're soft, flexible, sit comfortably, and the whole setup is discreet. Compact tins, zero smoke, zero vapor, perfect for meetings, commutes, or just getting through the day. You can get your instant delivery straight to your door or pick them up whenever you normally get your nicotine. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off their order at freepouch.com. That's F-R-E pouch.com with promo code LISTEN20. That's freepouch.com, F-R-E pouch.com, and use promo code LISTEN20 to get 20% off today. F-R-E, free. Strength you can count on. The holidays are here, and if you've got names on your list that are impossible to buy for, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts that you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last-minute. I found something perfect for any football fan in your life, the New York Times custom football book. You pick your favorite NFL team and they create a custom book with actual front page coverage from the Times going all the way back to that team's early years. We're talking historic games, championships, legendary moments, over 90 pages of real newspaper history. Talk about a gift that will blow them away. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, book lovers, sports fans, foodies, mixologists, and gardeners. You'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make, they give $1 back to nonprofit partners of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/Zabe. That's uncommongoods.com/CZA-Bravo-Echo for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. This is the Zabe Cast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Week 14 is not yet in the books as we sit here and record this on a Monday, but my God, the wreckage and the carnage and the triage from everything that happened in Week 14 in the NFL is going to take us deep into the day on Monday. I've spent a lot of time late on Sunday night after recording the podcast with Andy that was mostly about Indiana and a little bit about the NCAA. I've gone through and noticed things and found out things about NFL games that I said, wait a minute, what? That happened? And then, of course, I had to get Mr. X on because he's missed a couple weeks. That's my fault. He is ready to go ham on the NCAA and the selection committee. We say hello to Mr. X, our gambling D-gentleman, back after a couple-week hiatus. How you doing?
Good. Crazy weekend. Lots of fun to do here.
So what's your beef with the committee? Your answer is probably, how much time do you have? And my answer is about 40 minutes. Go.
Actually, you're going to be a little surprised. After spending ridiculous amounts of time listening to the complainers about what needs to be changed, my answer is nothing.
Really?
Because
you would not change a thing. You think the current system is not perfect, but more than good enough.
As good as it's going to get. Every time you come up with a system, there's an exception, and then you modify the rules, and then there's another exception. And I guess the constant, sometimes the correction is not better than the original. That doesn't mean there's not a problem. The problem is simply the way they did it. They didn't do their job. They did a terrible job.
Be the specific. The committee didn't do their job. Okay. What was their job?
Well, to put in the 10 large teams and, you know, what is it? One, two, three, four, five. Is it four or five? Conference champions. The way it was laid out was fine. I got a list of things they did wrong. And I guess it's to me, this is like intentional grounding. You used to say, is it grounding? And then you called it. Now they want to dissect the crap out of it and take all judgment out of it and set up criteria. But if you set up the criteria to take away this subjectivity, then maybe you ought to use that criteria.
All right. What criteria did the committee not follow?
Number one, they put up 4 points. Point four, you can change a team based on significant changes in players or coaches.
Where are you getting these from so I can read along in my hymn book?
It was on the screen when they did the interview with the committee chair right after
Hunter
the selection.
Hunter Yurecek. And who's the dude?
Fowler? Is that the guy's name?
It was Reese Davis. Reese Davis did the interview, and he pressed him pretty good. Yes. Okay, yes, so Yurecek's principles. What was this listed under? Guidelines, principles, or rules? Because they're all different, those things.
Your Honor, I don't know.
Okay.
I just know they put four bullets on the screen of what he said they use. And the fourth one said, I wrote it down, significant changes in coaches or players. If Mississippi doesn't fit that, please delete that.
Yeah.
Because if that's not a significant change, don't put it on the list.
Okay. So they said, hold on. I want to be specific here. I'm not trying to interrupt for people who complain about me interrupting. I'm trying to be specific before this point gets washed down the river of further discussion. Did they say that a team may be adjusted in their seating with a significant change of coaches, or that they must be changed? Because that's a huge difference.
May.
Okay. So you've got may and you have significant. And those two words are eight-lane highways of interpretation.
Right. And all I'm saying is if this doesn't fit it, what's gonna? Don't tell me bus crash. Other than that, if Mississippi doesn't fit it, take it off the table.
Old Miss should have been dinged for losing their head coach, especially one who is widely considered to be a brilliant offensive mind, even though he is a complete soulless douchebag.
Now, I would not have ever considered taking them out. I'm saying take out that rule because it's just stupid.
Well, no. You're saying that Yurecek said they could have been left out entirely?
Well, that's what it says.
Wow.
I wouldn't have done it.
Well, that would have been
ask Florida State.
Right. Well, Florida State lost their quarterback.
And that's different than a whole coaching staff and a bunch of players? I don't know.
Not their whole coaching staff. I don't know what number of guys are still left. And I don't know how many players punched out at Ole Miss. I could look that up right now. But don't forget, of all the Florida mistakes,
that's the least important.
All right, but the Florida State snub was in a four-team universe in the playoffs. Yeah. So it was a much tighter fit. If you were to knock Ole Miss out because Kiffin left, it would be an injustice on top of a travesty to the kids, the kids who are playing the game for money now at Ole Miss. And that would have been completely wrong in my book.
No question. And I shouldn't have led with this because it's the least important. All I'm saying is I laughed when they put it on the screen because if it doesn't apply now, it ain't going to apply. Get it off. That's all I was saying.
Okay. But here's the thing on all this stuff. There are no rules. They're guidelines. Sure. I'm reminded of the great scene in Pirates of the Caribbean with Johnny Depp when he calls parlay, which was an old pirate term for don't kill me, just take me captive. Parlay, I give up. And at one point he said, "Hey, 'tis more of a guideline than a rule." And that is perfectly it. These are all just sort of, well, we kind of want to do it this way. Okay. They didn't really miss anybody. The only real issue is Notre Dame taking one for the team instead of Alabama taking one for the team. I don't think BYU has much of a strong case. So it's a two-part thing, and it really comes down to the fact that Alabama took one for the team last year. It's Notre Dame's turn. That's the way I see it.
Okay. Here's the thing. That is true that it came down to that. It's really picked two out of the three.
Yeah.
But they did a lot of things wrong in their whole process, and that's what I was going to say. First of all, back up a week, they set this up poorly the week prior because going into the last week of the season, it was Notre Dame, Bama, BYU, Miami. And after that last game of the season, they bumped Alabama up over Notre Dame because they, quote, beat Auburn. Okay.
Showed real toughness, said Juracek. And they looked good in the first half, said Juracek.
Beating a 5-7 Auburn on the road.
Who had fired their coach earlier in the year.
Right. This very same week, Miami went into Pitt and beat a top 20 team. Vanderbilt went into Tennessee and beat number 19 Tennessee, their big brothers who they never can beat. And they said they didn't get moved up or any credit for that, quote, because we realized Tennessee was not that good. Hello, they're better than Auburn.
Okay.
They only did that to put a buffer on Alabama and get them out of the cut line.
Yes.
And it was wrong.
Yes.
Okay, that's number one.
Hold on. I want to play a soundbite for you. Although I don't know if you'll be able to hear it, but Tim Brando was on with me on Friday's show. Actually, I think I played this yesterday with Andy. Did I play with this yesterday with Andy? Can't remember now. I'm going to play it again. Sorry for those of you that already heard this. Actually, no, I posted this to Twitter. Let me find it on Twitter. If I can find this on Twitter, then you'll be able to hear it, I'm pretty sure. But Brando saw this coming from a mile away. He read the committee like a book. And he said, basically, they made the determination that you can't have this party without Alabama being invited. They made that determination.
2 years in a row.
Right. All right. Tell me if you can hear this soundbite right here. So I got to hone in on the ACC situation. Do you think if Duke pulls the upset that the ACC will, in fact, be left out of the dance?
If you're asking me, they'll do everything in their power to allow Miami and at large to save face. If Duke wins that game against Virginia,
I'll tell you, Alabama not only could have, but probably should have lost to Auburn, moved up over Notre Dame so they could secure that Alabama still gets in the playoff regardless of the outcome of this afternoon's game with Georgia. Alabama can now comfortably go into that game knowing, even if we lose, unless we get blown out, we're in. You can't have this party without Alabama being in it. They know, and it's all about byproduct of screwing over Alabama last year when SMU got in and Alabama didn't. This committee is just knee-jerk reacting each year to whatever the problem was the year preceding.
So there you go. Timmy B nailed it on Friday. You can't have this party without Alabama. So if I may, you know, all of your and other people's histrionics, apologies, you're not hysterical, you're just pointing it out. Talking about what the committee did in the first four TV shows of the rankings and complaining about, well, they should have put this switch a week earlier, it doesn't matter. Like when you see a three-card Monty dealer and he's taking the three cards and he's mixing them all around, do any of those early moves of the cards matter? No. It's just the final move of the cards. There's only three of them that matter. So who cares what the fucking committee said? This is a TV show that they are contractually obligated to deliver to the networks for programming and for sponsorship that they would probably love to get out of at this point, but they can't.
Yes.
The floor
is sort of. To me, that's it's like drafting a high school English paper. And you had to submit five drafts. And then when it's time for the final, you actually look at it and go, yeah, I had this crap wrong all along. And let me switch it before I turn it in.
Right.
And that's what they did. But I do think there's something else wrong. And that is, again, sometimes the explanations are worse than the problem. For example, going into the end, they had it, as we all know, Notre Dame, BYU, Miami. BYU loses. They drop them down. We all saw this coming. And then when the last spot is Notre Dame / Miami, they're going, yeah, Miami beat them head to head. So he said on the show, since they were adjacent, we had to give value to the head to head. Since when does that only apply to adjacent teams? Why didn't it apply always? It makes no sense to say, since you're 10 and 11, we're going to look at head to head. But if you're 10 and 12, we're not. It make no sense whatsoever. And also, Reese Davis turned it to Alabama and mentioned that they didn't drop down at all for the getting waxed by Georgia.
-3 yards rushing.
Yeah, as I said, I sat on my ass in the TV room for 12 hours and I had more yards rushing than Bama.
Yes, you did.
Zero.
Yes, you did.
So when they dropped BYU out, suddenly Notre Dame and Miami are adjacent and they have to look head to head. So then he goes to Bama and he says, you didn't drop them down. And he said, well, we're not going to do that. To which you say, BYU has a question.
Yeah, I know.
You just drop them down. And some people say, well, you can drop them people down as long as, because every team, we looked at the last 3 years, every team that's lost a conference championship game has moved down in the rankings, but they don't want to move them out. But by moving BYU down, you changed who's in, so that's the same thing. BYU down was just another way to put Bama.
Your points are all valid, and they have been well enumerated on the interwebs by many, many people. But I must say at this point, it doesn't fucking matter. This is akin to honing in on what a politician said a year ago or under a different administration, and then hearing them say the exact opposite now because there's their politician in office and screaming bloody murder like, well, wait a minute, what changed? This is the way of the world. This committee will use whatever convoluted, absurd explanations they can to justify putting in who they want to put in because it's a committee. It's not computer rankings. I've seen some people pine for the return of the actual computer rankings. Everything from the Sagarins to the Kali Matrix and more. But there will still be complaints about that. The real problem is there is no way to, in a tidy fashion, create a logical rule-based playoff entry criteria on a landscape of 132 Division I football programs of all kinds of varying sizes and costs and support and money. There was a college football program this year, I think it was Memphis, that said to save money, we're going with one uniform for home, yeah, one for road, and we're not changing our helmet. Because they're like, we're that broke. How do you compare them in a good season against Alabama or Notre Dame? Answer, you can't. This is akin to a kid at Christmas getting a big cardboard box that has a Monopoly board, a few pieces, and some dice with a chunk of slot car racing track with a couple of cars with a game of with some cards from Strat-O-Matic Baseball in it, and you shake the thing up and you dump it out and say, here, play this game. There's too many parts that don't even relate and don't fit to each other. And teams like Notre Dame that aren't in a conference and unbalanced conference schedules and conference championship games that have the wrong teams in them, like Virginia and Duke. My apologies, my sorrows to you and Virginia. Tough loss. Dagger of a loss.
Dagger.
So dagger. That's the world we live in. So the only thing left to decide at this point was two things. One, how big do you want this playoff? Can you answer that? Because I've got my thoughts. How big do you want the D1 playoff?
Oh, I think 12's fine.
I think 12 is fine as well. 16 is pushing it. The people that are screaming for Division II does 40. And I'm like, yeah, but nobody watches those games.
And those teams are, you know, kind of comparable, and they don't have any way to do it.
Ding.
There's no way that any of these – there's no way that – it is getting more balanced. When we went from 4 to 12, we thought, you know – it's a waste of a couple rounds because there's usually three dominant teams that aren't going to lose. Now it's more,
it still kind of is a waste. Cause
now they can.
My money,
I don't think more.
Yeah, my money won't be on anyone but Georgia, Ohio State, or Indiana. Just
fair.
Truth be told. But no, you're right. The landscape is getting flatter now in D1. The D2 and D3 landscapes are super flat. That's why they can do these 40-team playoffs. Also, sure, Nobody cares to watch them. Remember, we're putting on a TV show. And remember, television does not want unlimited inventory of games. They don't have the time or the place to put them all. So 12 to 16 is about the most. So let's just say it's 12. If you want 12 teams, then you just have to decide, do we want a fixed path reward system of, yay, you won your little shitberg conference, the Sun Belt. You're in the playoff. You can hang a banner at your stadium. You can get the boosters all riled up, and you can enjoy your 35-point whooping that you're about to get.
Like James Madison's about
to get. Like JMU is about to get. Like Tulane's going to get for the second time this year. That's also crazy. They already played this game, Tulane Ole Miss, and Ole Miss waxed them. But you can have that as a way to be inclusive and to let the littles have their seat at the table at Thanksgiving, albeit at the cardboard, at the card table that's at the end of the dining room table. You can do it that way. Just understand you're going to leave out some much better teams like Notre Dame and BYU this year to be inclusive. If you say fuck inclusive, which I'm also okay with, then you just pick the 12 best teams. Easy peasy. Okay. No show, no week-long drama and bullshit, no criteria. Literally just put the committee in a room and say, here's the 12, and here's why, and we're not going to answer any questions. Boom.
Okay.
Done.
I have two important challenges with this whole thing.
Yes.
Number one, when the kids and I were talking about this weekend, I said, what the committee needs to do is use the rule I always use with you with gambling. When you ask me, why should I bet on this team? And my answer is, because I said so. And I don't need to give all. So sometimes I want the committee, like you said, to just come out and say, here it is. Because every time you try to give a reason, you back yourself into a corner that's stupid. But I will say this. The one that bothers me the most, I call it the Nick Saban rule. When people sit back and go, well, you should just have the 12 best teams.
There's no way to tell that.
Sound as if that's somehow objective versus subjective, because you use these rankings and this data, which comes from subjective eye tests.
Right.
and things. So it's not as if somehow that is objective answer. No. Oh, we want the 12 best. But and this is the thing that I think is so lost in all of these things. When they put on the screen and compare strength of schedule and any other metric as if somehow it's accurate. And I know X4 was saying to me, Zabin, you win 11 games and lose to Indiana. I win 11 games and lose to Texas A&M. We both won 11 we should win. We both lost. You got a better strength of schedule because you lost to number one while I lose to number six. Does that really give you a better schedule? The numbers aren't the objective answers that people think. And the last thing on that point is they sit there and go, oh, look, this SEC team played the 30th best schedule, and this ACC team played the 45th. Okay, when you beat number 30 and I beat number 45, those are games top 10 teams are supposed to win. You don't get more for beating 35 versus 45. So to pretend that somehow that metric has value is wrong. Well, and when you eliminate the, there will always be years where the last quote conference winner that they set aside a berth for gets in and has no business being there and gets waxed and you say why. But the reason is you can't have more than half of the teams in August with no path. You can't have that. Or you end up with a Boise State team that went 50-3 over 4 years and had no path. They were eliminated before the start.
So if you create a path.
The only way you get Central Florida in when they're undefeated is to take in
the group of five.
Tulane, who's going to get waxed.
Right.
You have to accept that as a package.
What really screwed it up, again, was your Wahoos, because them stubbing their toe let in two undesirables. One undesirable actually, is fine. Two is too many.
Well, what actually screwed up everything, back to just do your job, if the ACC had a reasonable tiebreaker in place.
I know.
Virginia's playing Miami, and this whole thing goes away.
I know.
Because Miami wins, we're good. If Miami loses, you leave them home.
I know.
And it's good. But the tiebreaker that allows Duke in over Miami and puts teams that don't belong in the title game is what unraveled everything.
Yeah.
So
if you want to fix
the ACC tiebreaker, fix the conference tiebreakers, this problem goes away. The last thing I want to say on that, though, is to me, Alabama, when they went in the fourth quarter with 8.5 minutes to go
on
their own 12-yard line, down 14, like as you would say, you can't punt and stop them. They don't fumble punts. You don't get a turnover. You have to risk the whole game from your 12-yard
line. They went for it at the minus 12.
I'd have eliminated them for that alone.
They went for a fourth down on their minus 12?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see that. Holy
shit. 8.5 minutes to go. They went on the 12. Down 14. Down 14.
Wait, Alabama did?
Alabama did.
Against?
Georgia.
Oh, Georgia. Okay.
Yeah,
I was thinking of the Auburn game. My bad. Okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
When he said, hey, we were down 14 in the fourth quarter, we played him tough. Yeah, and then you went on fourth down on your 12-yard line. So you should be out for that alone.
I'm exhausted with all the talking.
Let's go.
The bottom line is this. There are 136 Division I teams, okay? Imagine a village with 136 women, and you're tasked with finding the most beautiful 12 of them. Beauty, as in who are the best teams, is in the eye of the beholder. There are no metrics for beauty, just like you can claim there's metrics for best, but they're not really metrics because there's not equality across all 136. We can't even tell who the best teams in the NFL are, which is a much more structured schedule of opponents with a much more level playing field salary cap. And we still don't know who's really better because a lot of people look at the Broncos, Mr. X, and go,
I'm not seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't know. So if you're tasked with Tell me who the 12 fairest women are in our village out of the 136. The top 50 would be easy. The top 20 would be a bit more challenging, but some eyeballing, checking them up and down would be another. Sexist pig. But then the argument over the fairest woman 13, 12, 11 would be impossible. Someone go, her? No way. And then give reasons why she's not worthy of that top 12. The whole endeavor is a folly, and I'm kind of sick of talking about it. So is there anything
to- Let me ask you this. Yes. You're the only person, I think, of all of this analysis, I think you're the only person that just somehow compared the NCAA to that show, The Bachelor.
Well, maybe it's because I've got the best beat on this. That's what it is. That's what it is. And by the way, the Notre Dame opting out of the Pop-Tart Bowl, I know you said, well, I got no problem with it.
No problem.
Okay. I don't have a problem with it. In other words, my life is going to be just fine, but it doesn't not make them a big old bitch for doing it, because they went to the Sun Bowl and they went to the Gator Bowl prior to last year's run. So obviously they'll take a bowl if they're three or four losses, which they did. They threw a tantrum here and it makes them a bitch. Here's why. Georgia got the biggest screw job ever when they dropped from 1-6 after losing to Alabama by 3 on a bad call as well. They had only won 29 games in a row. Their average margin of victory was 24 points that year, and they missed the playoff, 14 playoff. What did Kirby Smart and Georgia do? They went to a bowl game, and they deleted Florida State's fucking hard drive 63-3 using a bunch of players that ended up getting drafted in April. And then Kirby Smart said, okay, we should probably change the system. And the next year they went to 12. That's fucking gangster shit right there, and I love it. I'm not even a Georgia fan per se, but I got such respect for Kirby Smart and Georgia being fucking gangsters. Notre Dame, you're a bitch. End of my rant.
The only thing I'll say is the whole bowl outside of the playoffs, the whole bowl system is hanging by a thread because the players opt out, the coaches are changing teams. It's almost like a spring practice game. The teams that are ranked 20th and the kids vote not to play is like on page 4. Notre Dame is at the top of the chart. Oh my God, how can they do it? There's like 11 teams that have already said no, but we only care about Notre Dame because, the kids and everyone that says they shouldn't take it from the kids are the ones that voted not to go. And they got a right to say this bowl system sucks. We ain't going.
Yeah.
I don't care.
All right.
A lot of players aren't going. A lot of teams aren't going. It ain't just Notre Dame.
I agree. When you say the bowl system is hanging by a thread, I also agree. However, I would add, it's the thread that is always the most impossible one to cut, and you end up marveling at, Jesus, there's only one thread left. Why can't I cut through this? You ever done like a home project where you're trying to cut something? You're like, why is this thing not letting go? I believe that the bowl system is like a cockroach that will outlive all of these changes for reasons that baffle all of us, mainly because these games are Yule logs for the networks to put on TV. Okay, let's get to the NFL. Last night, the Chiefs' reign likely ended. They still have a mathematical path to the playoffs, but it's going to take a lot. More importantly, they just didn't look very good. The Texans' defense is legit. But Andy Reid gets our very first, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing going for it on 4th-and-1 at your own 31 in a 10-10 game with over 10 minutes left? Hey, what if they convert? Tell them what they've won, Bob. A new set of downs. And tell them what they lose. Oh, you're already giving the Texans a field goal. You fucking moron. This play and this decision, I think, belongs in the pantheon of coaches have learned the wrong lessons about being aggressive or probabilities, and they're now on the other side of stupid. This was indefensible, and you were right, Mr. X, for texting me immediately, apoplectic.
What are you doing?
Your thoughts.
It was the, okay, Super Bowls are what we remember. It was the worst decision in Andy Reid's coaching career by a mile. And here's why, on top of what you said. This is the heart of what I've been saying, and we've been talking about for years, this whole analytics, generic, oh, go for it on fourth and three. And I always say, what about today? Let me just tell you something. Okay, we know the Chiefs were down 10-0 at the half. Listen to this. They come out in the second half. Listen to what the Texans did. Three plays, minus 4 yards, punt. Three plays, 2 yards, punt. Three plays, 0 yards, punt. Three plays, 0 yards, punt. End of quarter. Five possessions, 5-3 and outs, 0 yards. And then they had a great drive. They went six plays, 15 yards, another punt. At this point, the Chiefs have caught up, and it's 10-10. Six punts in just over a quarter. Six punts, no yards. Now the Chiefs have a 10-10 game on their own 30-yard line. How are you feeling about your defense and your chances of winning this football game? Pretty good. I was on the Texans. I'm going, God, I hope we lose by three because they're not going to score again. And I'm catching four. Now, wait a minute. Andy Reid's going on his own 30. His defense has stopped him six times in a row for 0 yards.
Right.
You punt that ball. Guess what? You probably stop him a seventh time.
I would be willing to bet that Stroud panics into a mistake because they know they can't move the ball.
Yeah, well, they were playing conservative for the same reason of we're playing good defense, but now it's 10-10. So he goes, they don't make it, and guess what? They drive 30 yards for their touchdown, game, set,
seal
match.
The game. Well, not only that, the play call was
it's
shit.
It's about the defense.
The play call was shit.
Don't tell me that Mahomes can convert. As you said, what have you won? Nothing. If six consecutive stops doesn't give you confidence to punt the ball and win the game, what game are you watching?
I understand that, and I agree completely. And also, the play call sucked. It was four wide shotgun on fourth and one. I know the Chiefs can't run the ball very well right now. If you can't get a fucking yard, then what are you doing? But that's the coaches overthinking things. So that's our first. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Second, what are you doing? Replay. In Baltimore, the Isaiah Likely touchdown is going to go down as an all-timer. And it's so idiotic. A football move. Oh, okay, what does he got to do? The gritty? Is the gritty busting that? Is that a football move? It was a touchdown to the naked eye. It's a touchdown to everyone's common sensibility. It's only because replay mandated the rule book get expanded with all these clauses, and here's the necessary components of the rule book. Used to be simple. It said a catch was possession plus 2 feet inbounds or a body part. Now it's, well, they got to do this, got to do that, can't do this, can't do that, because replay started looking at everything frame by frame. It's why replay was never meant to be an officiating tool. It's for us at home to see what actually happened, but also accept the fact that humans make calls and they fuck up and they make mistakes. In any given game, there's about three or four plays that when put under a microscope, you actually can't see what really happened. Like the Rodgers interception earlier in the game. Remember that call? You couldn't tell. It was a mass of bodies. His leg was down. It wasn't down. Who had the ball? When did it come out? So what are we doing with replay?
What are you doing?
It's just such a waste of fucking time. And the people that cling to replay say, well, I'll trade off sometimes instant replay getting things wrong to make sure we've got a backstop for an egregious play that could decide the outcome of a game. This decided the outcome of a game. It was 27-22 with 2 minutes to go, and you took six off the board because, well, technically he should have had a third step. He should have, shimmied his ass or done the gritty or some football-related move.
What are you doing?
You know, I think the issue is with the rule, because what if they'd ruled it incomplete on the field? We're still dealing with the fact that the football move rule, I've said for years, how do you do a football move after a touchdown?
Right.
What are you supposed to do? Spike it?
Right. Celebrate? Why do you need?
What's the next move? There isn't a move after a touchdown.
Well, they claimed, the pool reporter who asked the referee, the coordinating referee, he said, well, in this case, a football move would be the third step. The third otherwise unnecessary step in the end zone.
Yeah. Mind you, you're at the sideline, you got to get 2 feet down inbounds and 1 foot out of bounds to make three? That makes no sense.
Well, you also have to survive contact with the ground, even if you're out of bounds. Yeah. So if you catch a ball inbounds, get 2 feet down, but you are in the process of falling, then you have to survive contact with the ground. Now, you could even get 2 feet inbounds, start to stumble out of bounds, and you could take four stumbling steps, hit the ground near the popcorn vendor, and if the ball comes loose, they will rule it incomplete because they have added all this legalese, this language to try to precisely define a catch only because replay exists. If replay didn't exist, refs use their eyeballs and their brains and they make a call, touchdown or INT or incomplete, and we live with it, and we go forward in our lives.
I still think the whole what is a catch is obviously scrutinized in slow-mo.
Which it should never be.
It's still a problem. It's still a problem with they have never been able to really come up with a good what is a catch. The third step, the third move, when you listen to it, is a stupid rule.
But Mr.
Because
X,
you
Mr.
don't X. have a football move after a touchdown.
Mr.
You
X,
don't.
What's the definition of love? Right.
Oh, puke.
Right. So in other words, the definition of a catch is as impossible to state as the definition of love. It is a perceptive thing. You can try to codify it. You can say three steps, football move, inbounds, out of bounds, survive the contact with the ground, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
The catch, everything is a judgment call in sports. Block, charge, catch, no catch, holding, pass interference. It's fucking judgment. And we want to try to force technology to make it perfect. Why? None of it is perfect. Nothing. The humans playing the game aren't perfect. The coaches aren't perfect. The coaches are idiots. The referees are also going to be imperfect. It sounds like you're a replay guy still. You don't like my blaspheming of your false god. But I'm here to tell you, Mr. X, with a great certainty, you are worshiping a false god if you think replay is going to save you or anyone else in sports. It isn't, and it hasn't, and it will never. End of rant.
Well, that's a second conversation. What I'm saying is let's not mix everything in the same blender. If the rule sucks, it doesn't matter if you're calling it live on the field or in under the hood. If the rule is difficult, there's no correct answer.
And what you don't understand is the rule got difficult because of replay. I'm telling you, the rule was never this difficult.
If they got rid of replay tomorrow, we'd still have the same rules, and the ref would be charged with somehow figuring out a football move, and it's still a bullshit rule.
Well, you could say the football move was likely extending the ball away from his chest.
Yeah, I kind of thought so, because he was protecting it from being swatted away. Yeah, I would have thought that.
I mean,
anyway.
This goes back to Calvin Johnson. Remember that infamous catch?
Yeah, that's why they changed the rule.
He was so big, and his hands were giant paws, that he had the ball he had it vice gripped into one hand. And while falling down in the back of the end zone, used the vice grip ball to just tripod himself on the ground.
And left it there.
And he left it there. And they were like,
well, that wasn't as bad as the one that led to the rule change was the Super Bowl or the Tampa Bay Ram game, where he caught it and he touched the ground with it while having full possession. And that cost the Bucs the game.
Right.
And that's when they changed that rule. The best one of all time was the Cardinals-Redskins. Before your time, mid-70s. The game-winning play that, as I recall, knocked Washington out of the playoffs, I think. Guy went up, I think it was Roy Green, in the end zone, caught the ball as they, what do they call it now? High-pointing.
Yeah.
Caught the ball at the peak. got hit, ball was jarred loose. The refs huddled for the longest period of time and called it a touchdown because he had possession, even though he never got a foot down. He had possession in the air, lost it before he hit the ground, and they said that's a catch because he had it in the air.
When was this again?
I'm going to guess 74, 75.
Roy Green of the Cardinals?
Cardinals, Redskins. I think it was Roy Green. I might have that wrong.
I mentioned with Andy yesterday there was a Cardinal-Redskin game that ended with a catch in the end zone and a ball batted out of the hands.
That's it, probably.
Yeah, but I don't think it was because he was in the air. I think it was some other interpretation.
Well, but the point, in this one, he never actually came down.
Okay. But
he lost possession before hitting 1 foot down, but they said he had possession in the air because we hadn't defined a catch.
So air possession in the end zone was good enough back then?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So again, back to my point of define a catch, define love. So your wife cheats on you with her high school boyfriend one night only. Because they hooked up on Facebook. She instantly regretted it, admitted it to you tearfully. But your wife also donated one of her kidneys to you so you could live. Does she love you?
I always say, just put me in the top 10 somewhere. Between four kids and a dog, I just want to be in the top 10 somewhere.
Okay, fine. But
I can't answer that one. That's a little too hypothetical for me.
But my point stands. Like, how do you how do you adjudicate the competing different concepts of, well, you shouldn't have cheated on them, but you did give him a kidney. What trumps what? Like, it's such bullshit. It should just be a basic assessment, and you keep her moving. Okay, so there's that. Let me
summarize this. The NCAA is a lot like The Bachelor Show, and what is a catch is a lot like cheating on your spouse. Okay, got it. What's next?
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job posts seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Hey, Al Baldo here, and as you know, I threw in the towel on the whole hair battle a long time ago. But you know what? For a lot of you out there, this can be a stressful process. You're looking in the mirror every day, watching it happen, wondering what actually works and what is just snake oil. Well, here's the thing. You shouldn't have to rearrange your life to figure this out on your own. Hims makes it simple. Through HIMSS, you get 100% online access to personalized treatment plans with doctor-trusted ingredients that actually work, like finasteride and minoxidil. We're talking chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. These ingredients can help stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. No awkward doctor visits, no hidden fees or surprise costs, just real personalized care on your schedule that puts your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit HIMSS.com/Zabe. That's HIMSS.com/Zabe for your online free visit. That's HIMSS.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Future products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, number three, what are you doing? The Raiders with the all-time bad beat kicking a field goal with zeros on the clock, down 10 to cover 7.5.
What are you doing?
This got Dave Portnoy of Barstool so fired up, and I'm surprised that he hasn't lost his job with Fox about this. He called for Pete Carroll to be murdered.
That was a bit rough.
This is, I'm not a guy that likes to cancel people, but this was completely out of bounds in today's society when this stuff is happening.
Investigate the Raiders. Investigate the Raiders.
You can't hear this, Ken.
What are they doing?
No, but I heard it. I've already played it.
What the fuck? That's the worst beat of all time. That is cheating.
His voice and his face look so pathetic. This is a nearly 50-year-old man, not married, childless, rich beyond all belief, and he is hysterically angry about this bad beat. Like, he's not just saying, you suck, what are you doing? This is like he's genuinely pissed off that somebody stole money from him when he's already got too much money anyway. It was such a bad look even before he said that Pete Carroll should be, quote, murdered.
The play before this, there was fucking 20 seconds. They threw it.
That's ridiculous.
Prison! The spread's 8.5. They spiked the ball, by the way. They ran up and spiked it as a temple. Prison Pete Carroll! Murder Pete Carroll! I want Pete Carroll murdered. Can you see this play right here?
I mean, you cannot say that. Because who knows?
Yeah, it's not good when people can do drunken rants to millions and millions of followers that are passionate. That's a bad situation.
I mean, all it takes is one lunatic, incel, stoolie worshiper who's like, oh, I'll take care of you there, El Prez. I got you. And maybe they don't succeed. Let's hope not. But what if someone shoots through the window of Pete Carroll's house? Then what? You're literally inciting violence. Now, I will admit, it was very odd. The Raiders' urgent strategy down the stretch to spike the ball with 17 seconds, no timeouts, long completion, the very lucky or unlucky flag that was thrown for a tiny little sort of push on the receiver to keep him down to make the clock run. And then, of course, the field goal that we knew meant nothing. Very, very odd. I will agree on that.
Yeah, but okay.
But
first of all, there's the 2 points. One, his rant and the things he said. I mean, I'm sorry. You got to get on and correct that and fix that right now. I mean, I don't want to go down this road, but, people gotten a lot of heat for inciting violence in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine to say.
What are you doing?
Right. It's fine to say jail because we know that's metaphorical. We know that no one's going to actually go to jail.
Exactly.
Cannot fucking say murder. It's insane. And it's unhinged for him. It's like, dude, you've won a lot of big bets and we've seen you post those wins online. Yeah. We know what your net worth is. But fucking A, man. This is real life. In a world in which Kevin Petullo, the OC for the Eagles, had his house pelted with eggs, where his wife and children sleep. The fuck, Eagle fans?
Yeah, that's terrible.
Imagine being a child in that house, hearing eggs or rocks hit the side of your house, and having to go to school the next day with people talking shit about your dad. What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I can't begin to address society. I can only address football. And I will say this on that. First of all, yes, me and my website, we had the Raiders. Full disclosure. that was a great win. I don't understand the bad beat thing. And I have like two guys, VIPs. I was only watching that game along with the other games with X4, and I said, I'm going to be getting a text or an email momentarily, and I did, because I always get that one. When you win a game like that with the Raiders, we always say, had it all along. Okay, had it all along. We're on the right. But it was an incredibly lucky win. But I will say this about the whole what is proper and improper for a coach or a team to do. It's not if you beat me, you're wrong, and if you help me, you're right. That's stupid. But what I will say is playing is always okay. Questionable is sometimes not playing. How many times has a team down two or three scores thrown a touchdown on the last play of the game? They're allowed to play. You don't say you were down 10, why'd you throw a touchdown pass? You played. We always do that. If that last play had been a TD pass, would this have been the same thing? I don't know. Why is it that a field goal draws such ire when it covers a line, but a touchdown does not? I get that it's kind of, you say, oh, well, why'd you need the field goal? You didn't need the touchdown either. You'd lost the game.
All right, well, let's go. Let's just go.
When they play, I'm okay with it. People get more offended if it's like, well, you were running to the end zone, you slid down on the one, and the game's over. Why did you not play?
I hear you.
When I'm on the other side of those, if you're playing to the gun, play to the gun.
I agree with you on that, and I have no problem with anything other than a curiosity as to, so with 4 seconds left, down 10, you've got one play. You can't win the game under any circumstance. Even a field goal deletes 4 seconds, right?
Right. Sure.
So what then are you supposed to do? Neither play wins the game. What do you choose? That is the most curious thing. Now, the question becomes, do coaches know that all things being equal, their owners, their billionaire owners and their billionaire millionaire friends often like to bet on the home team for no other reason than, hey, we're in the suite. We should put a little something on the boys plus the number.
Just like Zabe in Vegas.
I don't know what that is.
Well, when you're in Vegas, you talked about it's a little more fun to have a bet on every game that you're watching. So that's what they're doing.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But they generally, if they're at the game as a guest of the owner, they're not going to bet against the home team, right?
Yeah, you don't bet the don't pass line.
Right. So in that moment, as there's 4 seconds left, did Pete Carroll know that if he went for the touchdown, which would not have won the game, instead of the field goal, which would at least have covered the spread, that he would get an ass chewing from the awful haircutted, insanely lizard-like looking Al Davis spawn owner? I would love to know that. My instinct says probably. The coaches probably know covering the spread is also important if nothing else is available at the end of the day, right?
Good question. You know, it also cashed the over on that too. It was a double whammy. It changed the spread and the over under. So it hit both sides on that. I guess at the end of the day, it's very possible. And I'd like to see the camera in that owner suite. Are they high fiving to cut it from 10 to 7 and cover? Okay. If so, you got a real good point. However, I think division rivals, Raiders, Broncos, and Carroll wants to lose by less if you're going to lose. And they lost 10-7 the first time. They lost 17-10 the second time. You know, is it insignificant? Yes, it is. But as I say, if they throw a touchdown, do we have the same outrage? It's a good question. I don't think it's outrageous as everyone says. And that's not just because it hit the win for us. I don't have a problem with when you say, why did you do that? You couldn't win. Well, a touchdown doesn't win. They still play. I don't know. They wanted to lose by less to a 10-2 Bronco team. I don't know. Call it style point, lip, whatever.
The one thing
beat me twice, but I covered. I'm a good coach. Good coaches are often judged by, do you do better than you're supposed to? And you know what that means? Cover. I don't know.
I would say this, the one thing that I reject emphatically is anyone who claims that the league was in on a fix.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
And the referees were in on it. You, congratulations, you are officially a midwit. Not a nitwit. Exactly. You're smart enough to come up with some really dumb ideas. Congratulations. Exactly. Because if the league was in on it, like, oh, I'm going to wait just for this completion to then throw a bullshit penalty to give the Raiders one last timeout that they don't otherwise have.
Yeah.
You do realize this grand conspiracy hinges on a shitload of things, namely Kenny Pickett not sucking ass on that final play and making a complete pass. Like, there's too much riding to get to the very end where you conspire to somehow fuck people. And for those that say, oh, they just want to fuck the people on the other side of the bet. Well, you don't know how much people were on which side. I mean, maybe you do because of public money. Where was the
Denver
public money?
Denver was heavily bet by all the novices.
Yeah, okay.
Sharp money was on the Raiders. That line had come down, and that actually puts a little more of a cloud on it because the sharps have a little more control than the
public. Right. Right. Yeah. Maybe they do have some control. What I want you to look for is how many questions will Pete Carroll be asked about it?
Yeah.
Over under two.
Yeah, but it all comes down to this. If I got $1 million on that game and that ref is going to help me win it, and you put it all on, did he make that field goal? Could you help me a little sooner?
Yeah, that would be great.
Could have missed the field goal. Come on. There's no way there's a conspiracy on any of that.
Okay. No, all right. The next, what are you doing? Indianapolis Colts.
What are you doing?
Daniel Jones done for the year with a blown out right Achilles. Very tough scene. Guy's on a end-of-the-year deal. He's going to be a free agent in the offseason. He's old. He does rely on his legs. This thing is a huge setback. It's not necessarily career-ending, but it ain't good. And he was already playing on a slight fracture of his left leg, which I'd be willing to bet, not even being a doctor, that had to factor into that right Achilles going snap, crackle, pop. But also, Indianapolis, you traded two number ones for Sauce Gardner at the deadline, thinking, we got our quarterback, Daniel Jones. We're all in this year. They're going to go from 7-1 to maybe 7-9 if they don't win another game. And the way they looked against Jacksonville, they did not look like they could win another game. Indianapolis and Ms. Carly Ursay, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I never have a problem with a 90-year-old person, quote, playing for now, not the future.
Well, Carly, the old man's dead, and it's Carly who is now running things. She's become quite the celeb in Indy, taking sideline selfies with fans and giving away free hats. And she's there talking to the coaches. She wears a headset. They say she's not a bad owner that's meddling, this daughter that now controls the team. But man, I like when the Sauce Gardner deal happened, I said, he's not that good. And it's two number ones. And it's mid-season.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So now they're really fucked. They have no assets because of this trade to go get their next quarterback. Because Daniel Jones can't be it. And talk about bad luck for a franchise. Anthony Richardson's still not ready to play. You know why? He fractured his orbital socket warming up with an exercise band about at the start of the season. It's incredible.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Well, Anthony Richardson's not ready because he's been hurt, and Anthony Richardson is not ready because Anthony Richardson may never be ready.
He ain't good. He ain't good. Next, what are you doing? Kevin Stefanski.
What are you doing?
Shedeur Sanders has just engineered an amazing comeback. He's thrown three touchdowns, ran for another, 300 yards passing in the snow, granted against a shit Tennessee team. But that said, you take him off the field for the two-point conversion to try to tie the game? What are you doing? And they run this absolute cartoonish triple reverse that gets blown up to high hell. Idiot, Kevin Stefanski. He should be fired today for that alone. And I'm not even a huge Shedeur fan. It's so fucking dumb.
There's another point deep inside there, which is so prevalent in today's game, the desire for coaches to fool other teams instead of just beat other teams. They all have these two-point conversion plays that are like, they just have to be a genius. Now, that play was there. It was poorly executed. It was there. If he'd made the pitch early, like you said, it's a walk-in score. But the running back in the Wildcat was Judkins, I think it was, misread it, did it way too late, et cetera. But the point is, so today's era, my kids would do this. They would blame the player for doing it poorly. And I say it's up to the coach to know bad shit happens on crazy plays. Don't call one.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that have to go just right.
But that happens in so many games. We were talking about this. Oh, my God, I hate to say it. In the Virginia game, when I was watching football in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, even early, the simple rule was players play and the coaches, you know, coach. But now the coaches just have 500 plays on this laminated play sheet, and they'll run, you know, run the ball successfully to the left side four times in the first drive because they can't stop you. And then they say, okay, cool, now what are we going to do? Let's go down the sheet and come up with some other stuff. And to which my upbringing was, how about you do it again? How about you do what you're good at and they can't stop and wait until they adjust and stop you? But they don't do that anymore. They just have to show off the depth of their play chart. Like the Virginia game, where Duke had no ability to stop the run. They got the conference's leading rusher. He had two carries at the half. And then when you get into overtime and you have four downs to go 10 yards, which is an advantage, going second. I got an idea. Let's do a double pass, flea flick, or throw it downfield and go home. Or we could do what they can't stop. And that's some reason these two-point conversions, is when they dig down that play sheet and pull out the shit we've never seen them run before. And you go, what are you doing? How about you run one of the plays you're good at that you've run before?
2002 Patriots-Rams Super Bowl. Mike Martz has taken over for Dick Vermeil, who walked off into the sunset the year before. Mike Martz, considered an offensive genius. And, of course, with the greatest show on turf and Kurt Warner, it was a fun offense to watch. They did a lot of crazy shit, right? In that game, Marshall Faulk had only 17 carries. Marshall Faulk has a gold fucking jacket.
Yeah.
Kurt, you know, it was that game that radicalized me on realizing these coaches and offensive coaches in particular love their play sheet. I mean, they love it to a degree you and I can barely comprehend. And so therefore they are stubborn with the plays that they think are going to work and that they keep going to even when they don't work. Do you remember how many times, I forget which coach this was for the Redskins, kept throwing the corner fade to the end zone.
Oh, God.
To a receiver.
Wasn't it Gruden?
Yeah, I think it was Jay Gruden.
And it didn't matter if it was 0 for 12. I love that
play. He loves the play. It fucking didn't work. Yet he was absolutely enamored with it. So I'm telling you, when Stefanski sees this play that they've worked on maybe for 5 minutes in practice, because who has time to really drill a double reverse sort of gizmo play in a compacted red zone area? Nobody spends a lot of time on that. They fall in love with it because they think this will work. And then when it does work, they're like, what a genius I am. No, you're fucking lucky. If you just line up in a regular formation and you say, okay, we're going to run it off tackle, only one thing has to go right. Your tackle and your guard have to win that the line of scrimmage and make their blocks. That's it.
And if not, maybe the back breaks a tackle. Okay.
Yep. Right. And then there's a fallback on that. For that play by Stefanski to work, five things had to go just right. Okay.
And we probably practiced that, you know, a couple of times in the last month.
The Keyshawn Nixon interception of Caleb Williams at the end of the Packer Bear game was the exact same play they ran to beat the Eagles a week and a half ago. And everyone online is like, yeah, the Packers have coaches who look at this shit all the time. They were ready for that play. Nixon made a great read as well. He was actually trailing DJ Moore, who, by the way, was open in the flat.
Wide open.
And Caleb Williams just missed him. But he basically peeled off a Moore and then recircled back to the tight end and made the pick.
It was a great read.
Yeah.
Great read.
Great read. So these coaches love their plays. I mean, Ben Johnson loved that play. He's like, oh, this worked. We're going to run it again. You think they might have seen it? Just saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Joe Gibbs, everybody knew what Riggins was going to do. And he said, good luck stopping.
Yeah.
I don't have to fool you and prove I'm a genius.
I will say that not all you're right. Some coaches are better than others in terms of not being in love with their plays and their play sheet. But many of them worship their play sheet as if it was tablets chiseled on the mountain, brought down by Moses himself. Did I get that Bible reference right or not? I don't know. I don't do Bible on the show. Last two, what are you doings?
Right.
I take you to Buffalo and the NFL's increased concern about the players' noggins when they get ouchies and boo-boos on their head. T. Higgins was back for the Bengals for the first time in several weeks after a concussion. They're playing in, ice planet Hoth conditions, freezing ass cold Buffalo, snow on the ground, artificial turf. Higgins gets whipped to the ground, slams his head, gets up, while sitting down, starts rubbing his head. They take him to the blue tent of medical miracles, and they go, you know what? He's fine. Let him back in the game.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? They don't really give a shit about these players when it comes down to the end of the day. It's incredible. They let him go back in the game.
Yeah, I saw it. When he hit that, I said, okay, he's done for the season. I hope he's okay.
Right. Hope he's okay.
And then it was like, oh, wait, he's back. Oh, wow.
The blue tent of medical miracles. It just
never
ends.
Well, it's not just the doctors. They're trained now on how to pass the tests. Zabe, when X4, my last one, went for freshman high school football, you know, they take all these baseline tests before the season.
Right. Like, how can you think basic cognitive testing?
Yeah.
Baseline when you're not concussed, and then they ask the same questions when you are concussed, and if there's a big difference, they're like, yeah, his brain is scrambled.
He comes home the first day, and he's got a little more of the, like, do things right than, let's say, the rest of the family, perhaps. And he comes home, he says, Dad, you wouldn't believe it. The kids are all talking about how do you do the test to make yourself look so slow that then when you get hit, you look okay.
Yes, they game
the
test.
And they're all doing it.
I know.
And I'm like, you're 14 years old and you're trying to beat a concussion test. And well, I'm like, what are they doing?
The NFL also added the independent neurological spotter, whose job was to sit in the press box with binoculars and a TV feed. And when they see a guy that looks like he's concussed, like T. Higgins, they're supposed to step in and go get that guy off the field His brain is scrambled. Well, I guess that works 50% of the time. It works most of the time, maybe.
Yeah. And how about you're a little, the old, you're a little higher risk. Perhaps we should be a little more cautious.
Right.
Because you just cleared yesterday.
I know. It's something else. All right. Last, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
We switched to baseball. This extra chance get-in committee, limited voting, inducted into the Hall of Fame just this weekend. Jeff Kent? Instead of Don Mattingly and Dale fucking Murphy.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Jeff Kent was a fine ball player, but he was the guy teams were happy to pitch to instead of Bonds.
Yeah. He had men on base every at bat.
Oh my God. Yeah.
When I saw that come through that Kent made it, my first thought was, huh? He was an okay player. He's top 5,000 something. I didn't see him making it. Okay, whatever. And then I saw who didn't. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Dale Murphy was the best player in the game for a 6-year run. And that's always the thing I use. I want the guy who was the best. I don't like the whole career long. Did you play 20 something years? Blah, blah, blah. Accumulate stats. If you were the best there is during a run, you're in. Jim Rice fits that category. He doesn't fit a lot of things, but he was the best hitter for 10 years. You're in. Dale Murphy won 2 back-to-back and could have won more.
Yeah.
He was good. He was good. Jeff Kent was never the best.
No.
Anything. He wasn't the best player in the game for a month, much less years.
Yeah.
Like Murphy was. Those two are about as easy a comparison as most of these arguments ever get.
And once again,
Murphy was supposedly one of the most likable guys. The reporters loved him. Usually those are the guys who get in because the reporters like them.
Yeah. No, it looks like they're not going to get in. Also, Bonds and Clemens continuing to languish well below the threshold to get in. They've only got a couple more years before they fall off this ledge, which is already the secondary ledge of getting in the Hall of Fame. They'll likely never be in. I don't know if you have a strong feeling about this. You're more baseball than I am. My feeling is the Hall of Fame should have always been a hall of honor and fame and not just fame, and that if you're a true miscreant to the game, which Bonds was by cheating blatantly and Clemens was as well, then fuck it. You're not in this hall of fame and honor. It's not like people don't remember you. It's not like your highlights are not out there. It's not like you're not in the record books for what you did. But no, you're not being put into this hall, which is an honor. You're not honorable. Fuck off. That's my take. Yours? Yeah. Final take.
I'm on the other side. I get the cheating component, but we're not talking like marginal. This isn't Notre Dame or Miami. We're talking the best. Those guys aren't only Hall of Fame. Bonds is one of the top 2 or 3 hitters ever, and Clemens is a top 5 pitcher ever. And neither ever failed a drug test. And they played before they were illegal, for the most part. When they became illegal circa 04, everything that they were accused of was prior.
Okay.
And to me, that's the equivalent of change the speed limit and punish me for speeding last week. I can't do that.
You say that they were not illegal till 04. It was my understanding that they were illegal, but they didn't test.
Okay. Right. But I'm saying they never failed a drug test in their career. They were suspicious. Did they do it? Probably. But I don't think reporters should be judge and jury. You know, A-Rod failed the test. You failed. You were suspended. That's a different category than I'm damn sure you should have. You probably did cheat because I have a lot of anecdotal evidence. They never failed a test. Don't be that guy that says, I think you're guilty even though you were never caught. So I'm going to knock you out. You don't get that kind of power. Put them in. Be done. Yeah.
You know, the Hot Stove League is going on right now, Mr. X, and there's been like one signing of any significance. And there are a lot of good bats out there. It is so wild what the so-called Hot Stove League has become in baseball, where basically it just languishes until, I guess, Scott Boras can get to the winter meetings and beat the shit out of some teams and their GMs to pay his guys. And then you got the complication of what looks like the mother of all work stoppages coming at the end of next year. I don't know who's going to get paid.
Yeah. I guess they were all too busy just looking at the NCAA committee, perhaps, and they haven't really gotten hot yet. I have one. What are you doing, Zay? And it's a weak one, but I like
it.
I just kind of I get that it's not okay, even though X2 was emailing or texting our family chat that it's okay. During the Madison championship game Friday night, when they were making the huge to-do about throwing snowballs on the field.
Yep.
And he was texting in, it's Friday night on campus, get over it. You know, I mean, come on. And it's like, they should be throwing more. And I always laugh because my comment was, when they make the announcement that if anybody throws a snowball in the field, they're penalizing Madison. I'm like, what is the Troy band doing now other than making snowballs and getting ready to throw them on the field so the other team gets a penalty? But my, what do you know? It's like, when the announcers made the comment about how it's dangerous if they throw a snowball. And I'm thinking, you're on a football field in pads. Every single play, you can suffer a concussion or a major, major injury. But don't, please don't hit my pads with a snowball. Come on.
It's not that. It's somebody getting hit in the eye. Someone's going
to lose an eye. They're wearing a helmet.
No. Well, okay. What about the cheerleaders?
I don't hit the. Nobody cared if they hit the cheerleader. They just said, "Don't throw them on the field."
Yeah, but when you're throwing snowballs, Mr. X, you miss the players.
Oh, I
and
know.
Risk
hey,
hitting civilians.
I'm not saying they should be throwing
in the
them.
Eye.
I'm just saying. I think the whole "Oh my God, a player could get hurt" is a bit overrated.
Well, I think you're missing the point. That is, these are dangerous projectiles that can injure people who are innocent bystanders.
Fair.
Yeah, but that said, the band was getting pelted. The poor band. Imagine being a tuba player and your lips are already frozen and you're now getting hit with snowballs. Also, X4 can have a good drunken time with his buddies. Shame.
Yeah. Actually, X3, who did not go to that school, did go down to the game and was one of those moronic shirtless dudes you see.
He just wanted to go just for the fun. He's like, I didn't go here. My brother did. But
well, he had roommates that went and they rolled down and it's like, okay, not only are you going to your brother's championship game, you're shirtless. What are you doing?
JMU 20.5-point dogs at Oregon. You want to go, by the way? Let's go. Road trip. I've never seen Eugene. I've never seen Autzen. Be fun.
Maybe. It's going to be on my TV.
Yeah. It's a long way to go to see a 4-touchdown beaten because it feels like it's going to be a big one. And no disrespect to JMU, but man, Oregon, Nike U, they're on a different fucking level.
Oh, yeah. And of course, you know, in our house, as you texted me, I mean, here we are, Virginia playing, knowing that if
Virginia loses,
Madison gets in.
Divided and, house. You
yeah, and you
for
asked
Virginia.
Me how's the house. Yeah, you asked me how the house was divided. And I'm like, well, a couple that want JMU in. Of course, Mrs. X and I wanting Virginia in. And then, of course, there's the Hokie X4 who, as we say, would pull for the Taliban over UVA. So
that's right. That's, you got a Hokie, you got a Duke, and you got Oahu all in one room. Must have been a fun Friday night or Saturday night. All right, Mr. X. As always, you can find more of Mr. X at callmemrx.com. You can find him on Twitter at justcallmemrx. We're a little bit all over the map schedule-wise, so sorry this season kind of broke apart, but we'll get dialed in once the college football playoffs begin and the NFL postseason.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.